Blog Talk Radio.
As many of you know, last Friday I returned from Asia, from a two-week trip to Asia, which was a really good trip. We talked about that a little bit on the previous show. But what I didn't know last Saturday when I did the show is that I brought back with me from Asia some lousy bug that has basically flattened me completely this week. And I'm suffering from a pretty bad cold. So that's why my voice is a little off. It might crack at some decibels. And, you know, I might have to stop for a moment to cough or something. So I apologize in advance for the fact that I'm not completely there today. And I blame it all on Hong Kong. Well, actually, it was on Cathay Air, because I'm sure I got it on the airplane. All right, so today we're talking about Bernie Sanders. And let me just say this. You know, I don't know if Bernie's going to win the Democratic nomination. He probably won't. I think Hillary's probably got it sewed up. I do think Bernie will win New Hampshire. That's not controversial. I think it's pretty accepted wisdom at this point that he's going to run away with New Hampshire. He basically tied Hillary in Iowa, but this is the interesting thing about Iowa, and this is what I really want to talk about, is that in Iowa, Bernie Sanders, according to NPR, got 90% of the vote of anybody under 26. So the youth vote went 90% to Bernie. And I think this is something worth thinking about, right? I think very few young people even showed up for the Republican caucuses in Iowa. Very few young people vote Republican. So young people vote Democratic. And of those, 90%. At least in Iowa, voted for Bernie. And I think this is overwhelmingly the case across the United States, whereas there was a time 8 years ago where there was this huge movement of young people around Ron Paul. Bernie is much bigger among young people, much bigger around among young people than Ron Paul is. I just thought of the fact, you know, both Ron Paul and Bernie are really old. It's kind of weird. You wouldn't expect that of young people to be attracted to such old candidates as Bernie and Ron Paul are. So what's going on? Why is it that so many young people, college students, I would argue probably high school students, young professionals, are so attracted to the Bernie Sanders message? This is men, women, a lot of women. Young women under the age of 26 voted for Bernie over Hillary, in spite of the fact that obviously Hillary is a woman, and the conventional wisdom is that women vote for women. And no, young women in Iowa voted overwhelmingly for Bernie Sanders. He's going to win New Hampshire, and then the question is, can he win the South? And the main reason articulated for why Bernie Sanders can't win Nevada and can't win the South is that he has very little appeal among Hispanics and among black voters. He has a huge appeal among young white voters and among middle-class white voters generally. So, interesting. I mean, these are all kind of interesting cross-sections. A lot of people say, well, he wants to give free stuff to people. Well, if it was just about free stuff to people, then why wouldn't Hispanics and blacks and many others rally to the cause? Why isn't Bernie Sanders running away with this? If it was just about free stuff, right? I think it's deeper than free stuff. So you want to do a few things today. First of all, if you have ideas about why Bernie Sanders is so successful or so popular, call in. And let's do this. We'll leave the last, half an hour or so for people calling in about other issues, right? But let's make the first hour just about Bernie Sanders. I know Lee Ron at least wanted to talk about something last time, and we didn't get to his call, and there were some other calls that I didn't get to last time. So if you want to call about other stuff, anything you want, let's make that from 12:30 a.m. Pacific time, and we'll talk about that. But let's dedicate the next hour to discussing Bernie Sanders. And if we run out of stuff to talk about Bernie Sanders, I've got some other topics. There's some catch-up from a discussion of banking. People wanted me to talk about fractional reserve banking, and I can do that. And there's always Donald Trump that we can talk about. Actually, what I'm thinking of is next week doing the show on Donald Trump, particularly if he wins New Hampshire. I'd like to discuss why Donald Trump has such a huge appeal, and including among objectivists. I've noticed quite a few intelligent objectivists, being seduced by Donald Trump. So I'd like to take the Donald Trump. I've kind of brushed off Donald Trump and made fun of him, but I'd like to take that head on seriously and really talk about him, just like today we're taking on Bernie Sanders and talking about him seriously. And reflecting about what makes him so popular and what is indeed appealing about him. And actually, there are a lot of similarities between Bernie and Donald Trump, which we'll get to at the end. A lot of Bernie Sanders, a lot of people out there are torn between voting for Bernie Sanders or Donald Trump, which is a kind of an interesting notion that they'd be torn between Bernie Sanders, the radical leftist, and what the media is portraying as this radical right-wing guy called Donald Trump. But we'll talk about whether Donald Trump is a right-wing radical or what he is exactly. Wow, we've already got a couple of calls, and I assume these calls are about Bernie Sanders. So we'll start off with the calls. And then what I want to do is just give you a sense of what I want to do today. I want to go over Bernie Sanders' speech, particularly his speech on democratic socialism, what he means by democratic socialism. I think it's a fascinating speech. I think it's very revealing in terms of what he's about and what makes him appealing. I think it's revealing in terms of how he capitalizes on what young people have been taught in school over the last 50 years, but really, particularly over the last 20 or 30 years. And that explains part of his appeal. But it's a really, really interesting speech. Generally, I like to read these speeches of people who I generally despise. And what you discover when you read them is there's a lot of interesting stuff there. And just you can learn from how they structure their speeches, and you can learn from the kind of issues, the kind of triggers that they use to ignite support for themselves. Okay, as I said, if you've got a general question on a different topic unrelated to Bernie Sanders, hold on with it until about 50 minutes from now. And if you want to talk about Bernie Sanders, you can call in now. And it's, 347-324-3075, 347-324-3075. And I think you have to click press on 1. In order to get on the caller queue. Otherwise, I don't know that you're actually calling to ask a question or to make a comment. All right, so we're going to take our first call. Hi, you're on the Ron Book Show. Who's this?
Hi, this is Tom.
Hey, Tom. Where are you calling from?
Las Vegas.
Hey, so what's on your mind?
Bernie Sanders and socialism and why socialism survives. and why it hasn't been recognized as diluted and dangerous and destructive of the culture of civilization, basically, as demonstrated in Venezuela.
So what do you think? Why does it survive?
It survives. Well, let me be what should I be? Okay, let me put it as negative terms. Okay, for example, if I challenge you to name any country where socialism has ever failed, what would you say?
Every country it's been tried.
Okay, but every country that it's been tried, it's always produced exactly the same thing.
That's
right. It's always produced poverty, oppression, destruction, and death to the extent it's been tried.
That's right.
Okay, it cannot produce anything else.
That's right. We agree
on that. If it can't produce anything else, how can you say it's ever failed?
Well, so what you're saying is the goal of socialism is destruction. But no,
I'm
socialism.
Saying that it's not possible for it to produce anything but destruction. Therefore, everybody that says it has failed is telling people, look at what you see in practical reality, but disregard that because that's really not what socialists achieve. If it works, it's going to be utopia.
You see, but that's right.
The proper thing to do is to always say socialism succeeds so that when people go and look, they can see the destruction.
See, but in my view, people can't see the destruction. They don't see the destruction, and they never connect it to socialism.
They can see what's going on in Venezuela.
Yeah, but they don't connect it to socialism. They say Chavez is a crook, or they say, oh, it's because too many people oppose Chavez,
yes,
and he didn't get to do it properly. They look at Stalin,
yeah,
and they say, well, he wasn't a real communist. He was a thug.
Yeah.
They always make excuses for socialism, right?
But it always comes back to, if you will say that it has always succeeded, people are smart enough to look and see that what happens and all the examples they have are the only possible result. If you say, oh, it's never succeeded, then what they see is not the intended result.
Look, I agree with you fundamentally, but I don't think anything works. That is, I don't think just repositioning socialism that way convinces anybody. I think people are blinded to reality. People don't learn from reality. They don't learn from experience. And the reason they don't is because their philosophy, their fundamental underlying ideas blind them to the reality that's around them. So they always make rationalizations. They make excuses. They make examples. But they can't give up on the socialism they believe in.
Well,
and that's why the battle that we face, is fundamentally philosophical. It's not about teaching people about look at what socialism did. It's about figuring out what are the fundamental principles on which socialism is based and challenging those principles. And that's what we're going to talk about.
And the only way you can do that is by tying it to concrete reality.
No, because people don't learn anything from concrete reality. The only way you can tie it by tying it to fundamental.
How many kids do you know that have ever touched a hot stove and continue to touch a hot stove?
I know a lot of people.
They learn from reality.
I know a lot of people who take drugs and a variety of different drugs, and it ruins their lives, and they do it all over again. I know millions and millions of people. I know. I'm talking about adults. Children learn from reality. I'm talking about adults. Adults repeat mistakes over and over and over again, even though they know the results.
Because they have principles that support that.
Exactly.
And the only concretes they follow are the ones that say these are the principles that work.
So what we need to do is challenge
concretes.
The principles, not based on whether they work or not, but based on whether they're right or not. See, what the left has on us is that they have a principle, their principle of morality is sacrifice. Their principle of morality is suffering. The principle of morality is selflessness. And that's consistent with socialism. So if people are suffering, no big deal, because that's moral, that's good, that's okay, as long as it's for greater good, as long as it's for bigger purpose. And as long as you believe that altruism, that is the moral ideal of sacrifice, is a good thing, socialism will work. And that's what you have to challenge. You have to challenge your ideals. You have to challenge the fundamentals. The concretes are important. You can point to the concretes, and you need to point to the concretes. But it's never enough. You have to challenge them philosophically. And this was what Ayn Rand does. This is what Atlas Shrugged does. It challenges the very philosophy of the culture. It doesn't just tell you if you do these actions, these bad things happen. It says if you believe these ideas, these bad things happen, and therefore we need to change the fundamental ideas, and we need to change them philosophically, not just practically.
Okay, well, then in a case like that, I have a question for you.
Sure.
Could you comment on the Standard 15?
I don't know anything about the Standard 15. Never heard of it.
Oh, well, for example, Václav Havel, Czechoslovakia, was arrested the second time about 12 years after the first time. 6 months later, was addressing U.S. as president of Czechoslovakia. The American Revolution was based on about 15 years of complaints and promoting the rights of Englishmen to make changes. And Ayn Rand studied subjects that she wrote about, and with Atlas Shrugged, from about the time that John Galt went on strike to the destruction or collapse of New York City was about 15 years. Hitler rose to power over 14 years, 6 later became absolute ruler of Germany. Poland started...
Hitler became absolute ruler of Germany not 15 years later, 15 months later. But look, I don't believe in these things. I don't believe in these rules of thumb. You can find all kinds of patterns in history, but they're not causal patterns. They're accidental patterns. Anyway, I need to move on and keep talking about Bernie. So thanks for the call. Really appreciate it. Keep on listening to the show. And we've got one other caller, so let's take this, and then we'll get to Bernie's speech, if you guys let me. Hi, you're in the On Book Show. Who's this?
This is Mark.
Hey, Mark, where are you calling from?
Philadelphia.
All right. We got all over the country now. So what's up? What's on your mind?
Yeah. Well, this is a topic I've thought about some. Actually, pretty much everyone on my block has Bernie Sanders signs in their windows. And I think it's two reasons. One, he's a pure idealist, and I think you respond to that when you're younger. And two, he's kind of like a hippie anti-establishment guy. I mean, people, I'm 29, people our age are children of the hippie generation, and I think unlike our parents, where our parents had a much better economy and came out of school, were able to get jobs, and there was still, I think, a better sense of life then. People were, I think, just generally more industrious, and there were more opportunities. And, you know, I graduated in 08 in college, and lots of people got out of college, and there wasn't anything to do. And I think, you know, because a lot of younger people didn't learn the right things in college. They don't know the reasons, and their response to get some government guy to fix it.
All right, good. I mean, you're...
Those are my two.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And let me get to those issues, because I agree completely. Thanks for calling. I think that's absolutely right. I mean, Bernie Sanders presents himself and is a form of idealist. He's consistent. He presents a vision of the world, and it's not a vision of the world that is as radical as Chavez or as radical as Lenin. He's very careful to present it in realistic terms. So when Bernie Sanders points to a country as an example of what he wants, he points to Sweden. He points to Finland or Denmark. He even points to France and Germany. He doesn't have to point very far. He points when he's looking for inspiration. He doesn't take it from Karl Marx, not in his speeches. He doesn't take it from socialist thinkers of the past. He takes it from an American icon, a founding father for the left. He takes it from FDR. So he has this kind of realistic idealism, an idealism that is grounded in a certain perspective that's real, that is, that people can look and say, hey, that's pretty good. I want to be Sweden. I don't think being Sweden is that bad. And hey, he's quoting FDR. FDR is not some radical nut. FDR was another idealist. So he is an idealist with some reality to it. It's not completely floating. He's presenting real examples. He's trying to be, he's radical and yet not radical. He's radical in a sense that he's undercutting everything that is America. But he's not radical in a sense that he's saying, look, all I want us to be is like Europe. All I want us to be is like the best in Europe. And we might respond negatively to the example of Sweden, but for most people, you know, you visit Sweden, people are happy, people are relatively well off, and by the parameters that most people on the left play by, Sweden is this, you know, semi-heaven. So he is idealistic, and then he's in that sense, and then he's consistent. He consistently applies these ideas and he doesn't deviate. So he hates Wall Street, so he has a bunch of things to attack Wall Street. He's not like Hillary or like the Republicans that hedge everything, that contradict themselves, that it seem like they talk a good talk, but then you look at their voting record, it's inconsistent. Here is a guy like Ron Paul, whose voting record is to a large extent consistent with what he says. People admire people who have integrity, even if it's integrity to bad ideas. So here's an idealist, to some extent a rebel, not a complete hippie rebel in the sense of, again, wanting to abandon all material things and to go follow the grateful dead and smoke weed. Although, you could imagine Bernie Sanders following the Grateful Dead and smoking weed. But no, a rebel in a sense that he's not part of the establishment. He's not part, he hasn't voted for all the things everybody else has voted for. He doesn't get corporate money. That's a big part of it. A big part of it is not getting corporate money. It's not being part of the corporate machine. He makes a huge deal out of this. And he leverages a certain fear that exists in America today. He leverages a certain, real existential angst that people have today about corporations, about big business, and he connects it to big government, right? He connects big business to big government, just like Donald Trump does, just like many of the candidates out there, and just like kind of the popular culture does. They connect big business, you know, big government together, cronyism, and they call it, of course, crony capitalism, because they want to make cronyism a feature of capitalism. Whereas, as I've said many times on this show before, cronyism is a feature of statism. Cronyism is what you'll get if Bernie Sanders wins. Cronyism is what you'll get if Hillary wins. Cronyism is what you get if almost every Republican wins. Cronyism is a feature of big government, not the other way around. But what Bernie's telling you is the reason government is ineffective, the reason government is not providing us with what we really want, the reason government is out of touch and out of control and detached from the people is because of capitalism, because of cronyism. Cronyism is the cause of bad government. And therefore, vote for him because he doesn't get money from corporations. He's the anti-cronyism candidate. Bigger government, you will reduce cronyism, which is nuts and crazy and ridiculous and stupid and goes against reality, but people buy it because partially, I will argue, and one of the reasons I think Sanders is so popular among the young is there's no alternative narrative. There's nobody telling an alternative story. There's nobody actually articulating a pro-individualism, pro-free market, limited government, principled, idealistic, rebellious argument. We should be the rebels. We should be the rebels. The limited government side should be the rebels. And when Ron Paul did it, he wasn't the limited government. He sounded a lot like Bernie Sanders. He blamed the Fed not as a government institution, but as a big bank. And he hated Wall Street, just like Bernie does. If you listen to how Bernie talks about Wall Street, and if you listen to how Ron Paul talked about Wall Street, they echo one another. Because Ron Paul was not a true limited government pro-capitalist candidate. He was a populist, anti-Wall Street, anti-big business candidate. And Bernie Sanders is capturing basically the Ron Paul plus the leftist ideologues on the left among young people. So he's capturing both the left and the Ron Paul kind of segment of the population. And that's what makes him so popular. And it's his idealism, his consistency, his rebellion. The right, and the rights here I mean by the individualistic, limited government, pro-individual rights segment, doesn't have, is that kind of candidate who is a true rebel, who is truly idealistic and is consistent.
Right.
The closest I guess you have right now is a Donald Trump, but he's not idealistic, he's not consistent, he doesn't believe in anything. So he's a rebel, but that's it. He's an empty rebel. The alternative is a Ted Cruz, who in some ways is a rebel, in some way is consistent around limited government, except when it comes to the role of religion. People are not going to follow, not yet anyway, the day will come, but not yet, a rebel who is religious. So the right has nobody. The right has nobody who has these kind of characteristics. And this is what young people want. They want ideals. They want to believe in something. Now, these particular young people, the particular young people that we have today, trained and raised on a constant, unstopping flow of altruism. And a combination of altruism and, as the caller just mentioned, a real sense of existential angst, a real challenge, because the jobs are not there if you're young. The economy is not doing well. There are real, real issues and problems. And you're seeing, they are seeing, the rich get, or some rich get a lot richer. And yet their families and their own fortunes look relatively bleak. And they've been told a particular narrative, a particular story about how that came about, a particular narrative, a particular story that Bernie Sanders repeats over and over and over again. But this is a narrative and a story that the left has been repeating over and over and over again for the last 10, 15 years. And young people, this is all they've heard. This is the only interpretation of reality and interpretation of history that they know. And now Bernie Sanders is echoing it back to them. And they're saying, finally, a candidate who speaks the language that we've been raised on. The language of exploitation, the language of zero-sum game, the language of inequality. Inequality language is dominant here. And I can't help at this point. I can't help at this point. Plug my new book, right? So Equal is Unfair is my new book, right? It takes on the whole narrative. Don Watkins and I take on the whole narrative of inequality. And this is the key to understanding Bernie Sanders. He is reflecting back to these young people the whole narrative that they've heard from Obama, that they've heard from Paul Krugman, that they've heard from their teachers at the universities, all of their teachers at universities, almost all of them, that they've learned in high school, the narrative, the historical narrative, the contemporary narrative, the economic narrative. Bernie Sanders is reflecting back to them all of that. He's the first politician, much more so than even Obama, actually articulate the historical philosophical case for the United States becoming Europe. And this is exactly the case Don Watkins and I take on in our book, Equal is Unfair. Now, if every single one of the people listening to this show pre-order the book, it comes out on March 29th, it will be a bestseller. So please help us out and go get on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or any other book chain and order. And order a couple for your friends and order a bunch for Christmas presents that you hand out in December. Order one. One would be great. If everybody just ordered one, we would be doing fantastically well. And you haven't, because I know how many books have been pre-ordered, and there's still a lot of you who haven't pre-ordered the books. So go out and pre-order. Okay, when we get back, I really do want to go over Bernie Sanders' speech, because I think it's very revealing and really, really interesting, both in terms of the narrative that the left has adopted, who their heroes are, how they articulate the case, and then what they're actually proposing. Because it's important to understand what they're actually proposing. This is a moderate form of socialism. It's statism. It's radical statism. But it's not quite socialism in the technical sense. And we're going to talk about that. But to understand the appeal in young people, we have to understand what Bernie is actually saying. All right. We're going to be right back to actually go over the talk, one of his talks, right after these messages.
Selfishness, a virtue? It is according to the moral principles of objectivism. Conventional morality tells you to sacrifice your values to satisfy the needs of others. Ayn Rand opposes that view and offers a new concept of egoism, an ethics of rational selfishness that rejects sacrifice in all its forms. In The Virtue of Selfishness, Ayn Rand defies conventional thought, setting out a philosophy that holds man as a heroic being, with his own happiness as the moral purpose of his life. Explore Rand's new concept of egoism and order The Virtue of Selfishness at Amazon.com today.
You didn't build that. You don't pay your fair share. Who do you think you are? Ayn Rand knew exactly who you are. Rational, productive, independent. You work hard and use your own judgment. You choose your career path, your lifestyle, your values. You're living the American dream. And now you see that there are people who want to take away what you've created and who will call their lust to loot a virtue. People who think the needs of others is a claim on your money, your work, your life. Well, how can you fight back? That's what they do at the Ayn Rand Institute. They look closely at public policy beyond sound bites and election cycles, at the fundamental moral ideas that frame crucial debates. They focus on reframing the issues in line with reason, egoism, and individual rights to life, liberty, property, and the pursuit of happiness. Your life, liberty, property, and the pursuit of your happiness. Stand up with them to fight against the sacrifice of your values by making a contribution today at AynRand.org/support. They'll use your money to defend your values.
The Ayn Rand Institute's mission is to promote Ayn Rand's philosophy of reason, rational self-interest, and laissez-faire capitalism. We are currently looking for talented, passionate, and bright people who share our goal of advancing Ayn Rand's ideas in the world. The Ayn Rand Institute offers you the opportunity to impact the culture and make a difference each and every day. If you're interested in working at the Ayn Rand Institute, visit us at AynRand.org today. There you'll find details on employment opportunities and how to apply.
Ayn Rand was a radical thinker whose philosophical novels challenged students to reconsider their views on fundamental issues. The Fountainhead, Atlas Shrugged, and Anthem. These works have become classics of American literature that never fail to engage young people and stimulate intense classroom discussion. By offering these works for free to teachers, the Ayn Rand Institute hopes to encourage greater awareness and understanding of Rand's stimulating perspective. If you're a teacher who would like Ayn Rand's books in your classroom, visit AynRand.org. This is at no cost to you. Go to AynRand.org today.
For 30 years, the Ayn Rand Institute has been on the front lines of the culture wars, introducing millions of students to Ayn Rand's books and ideas, educating young intellectuals who now teach at universities around the world, and speaking out in defense of free speech, free markets, and free minds. You can join our battle for reason, individualism, and capitalism by making your contribution today at AynRand.org/support.
So one of the important things to understand about Bernie Sanders and the left generally is that they have a particular story about American history. And really the way they see American history, everything before FDR is miserable and pathetic. They never talk about the founding fathers, the founding documents. Those are uninteresting. Really, the founding father of America, for the left, is Franklin Delano Roosevelt. FDR really establishes America as the left sees it. Indeed, there's a new book out about economic growth by a well-known economist. And the argument there is that economic growth in America really only begun in a serious way, and in a way that benefited everybody and created the middle class in 1940. That is as a consequence of the New Deal policies of FDR. And this is standard rhetoric on the left. And it is bizarre. It is nuts if you understand actual economic history and you understand economics. But this is actually what they hold and what they advocate on a regular and systemic basis. So when Bernie Sanders is giving a speech, and the speech I'm using of Bernie's is the speech that he gave last year, where he really discusses what he means by democratic, what he calls democratic socialism. And, you know, this is a speech where he goes through what he really believes, and he covers most of the agenda items. So it's a very worthwhile speech to read if you want to understand Bernie. He starts out immediately at the beginning of the speech with, it's 1937, the Great Depression is on, millions of people out of work, millions of people are starving or don't have the necessities of life, and in came FDR and saved the day. He implemented a series of programs, to quote Bernie, that put millions of people back to work, took them out of poverty, and restored their faith in government. He makes a big deal about faith in government, right? Because they need faith in government. You got to believe in something. You can't believe in God, right? These are atheists. You can't believe in yourself. That would be evil individualism. So what's left is a belief in government. So according to Bernie, FDR really is where it's all start. And FDR is the hero, the founding hero of America. It's unbelievable, right? They completely ignore history. They completely ignore the founding of America. They ignore the founding fathers never make it into the speech, but FDR repeatedly. And what is his great achievement? His great achievement is Social Security. His great achievement is the minimum wage. His great achievement is the end of child labor. His great achievement is the 40-hour work week, collective bargaining, strong banking regulations, deposit insurance, job programs that put millions of people to work. All of these things, which Bernie Sanders says at the time were called socialism, and yet today they are the core, the fabric, the foundation of America, the foundation of the middle class. And that's what he's selling. Saying, look, FDR passed all these programs. They worked. People got jobs. People became rich. The middle class was created. And everybody depends on these programs. Nobody's against these programs. Nobody challenges these programs. These programs are here to stay. And they were called socialist once upon a time. So what's the big deal about my programs? They're just using the same label of socialism. But this is, all this stuff is good stuff. Who challenges that? And then the second founding father of the left is Johnson, President Johnson. And he passed Medicare and Medicaid. And look, everybody loves those. I mean, the Republicans want to save those. Nobody argues against Medicare and Medicaid. And they were called socialist programs. Now, note that not a single Republican challenges any of that. Who challenges the minimum wage? On principle. Or Social Security? On principle. Or 40-hour work week? On principle. Or collective bargaining? On principle. Or banking regulations? On principle. Or deposit insurance or job programs? Nobody challenges this. There's no ideologue of the right. There is no ideologue of the right. They're all little versions of Bernie Sanders. They're all little versions of social democracy. Just some of them believe in it less consistently, and some of them believe in it more consistently. And Bernie Sanders is the most consistent of all of them, and therefore he is loved by the young. because he is the only one. You know, he is Donald Trump and Kasich and Jeb Bush and all of these guys and Hillary Clinton, just more consistent. All of them believe in Medicare and Medicaid. All of them believe in the minimum wage. They might not want to raise it right now, but they all believe in some of this. And it's not that they're pragmatists. It's that they're all fundamentally collectivists, that they're all fundamentally altruists. And therefore, they have to be, in practice, in application, they have to be some version of social democrat. And there's nobody out there, no consistent principled opposition to any of this. I mean, Bernie Sanders wants single-payer health care. So does Donald Trump. Donald Trump is not the opposite of Bernie Sanders. Donald Trump is just another version of Bernie Sanders. A more obnoxious version of Bernie Sanders. All right, so the historical narrative is this. Country got into deep, deep trouble because of capitalism, because of income inequality. Call it the Great Depression. And to get us out of the Great Depression, we adopted all these programs that were called socialist at the time. But the fact is, they are what created modern America. They are what created the middle class. They are what we all benefit from today. So, this is what's good about America. All these programs. All these government interventions. That's what made America great. That's what's good about America. And all I want to do, I, Bernie Sanders, is expand these programs, broaden these programs, because they don't work anymore. Because of deregulation and because of tax cuts, they don't work anymore. So we need to expand them. We need to broaden them. We need to resurrect FDR. We need to resurrect Lyndon Johnson, and I'm your guy, Bernie Sanders. And remember that these kids that he's appealing to, these kids that he's appealing to studied history in our high schools and our universities, in history classes that make FDR out to be the greatest president in American history. Never challenged the establishment of the welfare state by LBJ. Think that was his great, great, great achievement. And in spite of all the other ills that LBJ brought about, the fact that he brought about Medicare and Medicaid and the welfare state makes him one of the great presidents. So Bernie Sanders plays into the story. Okay, here's the story again. Right. Here's the story again. FDR and Johnson saved America from capitalism's ills. But since the 1970s, the Republicans and the establishment Democrats have been undoing their programs. And because of that, tens of millions of American families continue to lack the basic necessities of life. This is quoting Bernie. While millions more struggle every day to provide a minimum standard of living for their families. Why? Because of all the undoing that's happened. The reality is, he says, that for the last 40 years, the middle class, the great middle class of this country, has been in decline, and faith in our political system is now extremely low. Again, he makes a big deal over faith in our political system. The rich get much richer. Almost everyone else gets poorer. Super PACs funded by billionaires by elections. This is the inequality narrative that's being told over and over and over again, over and over and over again, by everybody on the left, by every intellectual on the left. And Bernie Sanders is cashing in. Bernie Sanders is cashing in on the quality of history education in our high schools and our colleges, on the inequality narrative that's been told over and over again. He's cashing in on the inequality debate. Again, this is why you should buy my book with Don Watkins, Equal is Unfair, because you'll get the counter to this inequality argument. And here he says it. Look, America is the wealthiest nation in history. Few Americans know that because all the wealth is at the top. Now, that's complete BS, complete nonsense. The whole idea of stagnation over the last 40 years is nonsense. I mean, almost all Americans today have a supercomputer in their pocket. Just that very fact has raised their standard of living dramatically. And yet, that's not captured in the inequality numbers. So you don't capture that in income numbers or wealth numbers or any of these other numbers. So the perception is, oh no, Americans are just as have the same income and the same wealth as they did 40 years ago. And yet we have much better stuff. But how do you capture that? Where's that captured? Isn't captured. Now listen to this. This is interesting. How does Bernie explain the fact that the rich are getting richer? And this is really important because this is what creates real angst among people. He says, in fact, over the last 30 years, there's been a massive transfer of wealth, trillions of wealth, going from the middle class to the top, 1%. So it's a transfer of wealth. The top 1% haven't created anything. They haven't made anything. They haven't built anything. They don't deserve anything. Top 1% have basically taken the wealth from everybody else. There's been a redistribution of the pie. Now note what he capitalizes on here. He capitalizes on the ignorance of Americans. The ignorance of Americans that assumes that economics is a zero-sum game. That what we live in today is not a growing pie, but a pie that's just being redistributed. He buys into, or he's reinforcing the ignorance that suggests that the rich get rich by stealing, by taking, by redistributing, rather than by making, by building, by creating. Now that is a powerful, powerful thing. Because if the rich are really, they're redistributing, they are crooks, then that's really, really bad. Now, how are they taking? They're not taking by literally taking out a gun and stealing your money. They're taking by having disproportionate influence in politics and rigging the game. And he talks about rigging the game over and over and over again. Again, you know, really reinforcing this message. They rig the system so that the rich get richer and the poor get poorer, so that money flows not through welfare from the rich to the poor, but from the poor and the middle class to the rich. Because they have captured the political system. And political system, through regulations and through bailouts and through controls, moves money from the rich and the middle class, from the poor and the middle class to the rich. And it's always interesting, because the bailouts they always complain about are the bank bailouts. They never complain about the auto bailouts, right? They don't complain about the bailouts that they like. They complain about the bailouts they don't like, that are easy to present to people that they don't understand, which means the bank bailouts, because everybody inherently hates bankers. All right, we've talked about that in a previous show. Okay, we've got a call. Hi, you're on the Iran Book Show. Who's this?
Hi, Yaron. This is Dave from New York.
Hey, Dave. How are you doing?
Good. I was wondering, so you think the reason Bernie Sanders is doing so well is because the American sense of life has been eroding for the last 30 years. But also, I mean, Ayn Rand has been around for the last 30 years. Her books are selling like crazy. So where's our Ayn Rand candidate? I mean, it just seems like Ayn Rand has made waves, but just not a tsunami that we need.
It's not a tsunami. And we don't have a tsunami. We have waves. We have more candidates who know Ayn Rand. We have more candidates who read Ayn Rand. You know, Ted Cruz reads from Atlas Shrugged periodically on the campaign trail. But he's no Ayn Rand candidate. So we've made progress, but we're far, far away because we haven't created a tsunami. And why haven't we created a tsunami? It's because Ayn Rand demands that you challenge the most fundamental beliefs that we have. She challenges everything we believe in. And people read Ayn Rand and they get something superficially out of her, but they're not willing to challenge those deep beliefs. Now, a lot of these young people voting for Bernie Sanders have read Ayn Rand. But what they got from Ayn Rand is a rebelliousness, What they got from the fountainhead is, I should think for myself, but they don't really think for themselves. They want to be different. They want to be rebellious, and they go for somebody like Sanders. For Ayn Rand to become a tsunami, people have to start thinking and be willing not to just challenge things at the margin, but challenge altruism, challenge mysticism. So on the right, they would have, Ted Cruz candidate would have to challenge mysticism. On the left, a candidate would have to challenge altruism. And we live in a culture that's not willing to challenge either one of those. Not yet. Not yet. It's going to take a while. This is why I believe the battle we're in is a multi-decades battle. The tsunami will happen, but it will happen slowly over many decades, and we will gradually get there. So maybe the tsunami is a bad analogy, like most analogies are. So, you know, that it's frustrating, right? But it just takes time. And there's no way around the fact that it takes time, because what we're asking people is to rethink 2,000 years of the Judeo-Christian tradition. Yeah, we're challenging Christianity. We're challenging Judaism. That ain't going to happen quickly. It ain't going to happen quickly.
And also, something else, like when I bring up reason and objectivism to liberals, I hear this a lot. Have you heard of the elephant in the rider? I think it's from David Hume. And they talk about how the elephant is our emotions and the rider on the elephant is our reason.
Yep.
And so we really aren't in control. It's mostly subconscious.
Yes.
And I've heard this from like half a dozen people. I don't know where this is from.
Well, it's big. It's coming from evolutionary psychology, behavioral economics, behavioral finance. Everybody's pushing this right now. It's a big push to say we can't be rational. We've got biases that are built into our system. We are guided by emotions, which are triggered by our genes. And this is huge. And it really, again, makes it very difficult to convince people, makes it very difficult to challenge people with objectivism, where we're saying, no, you are actually in control. Your reason can be in control. It's not that it is in control. Indeed, for most people in the world out there, their reason is not in control. For most people in the world out there, they are driven by the emotion. We're seeing a whole generation of whim worshippers. I think these young people are all whim worshippers, not all. Most of them are whim worshippers. And that's, again, what attracts them to Bernie, is that he appeals to their emotion. He appeals to everything that they've been taught. It's easy. It's intuitive. It doesn't require thinking. Bernie doesn't require thinking. Everything he says, their professors have told them already. Their high school teachers taught them already. And Obama for 8 years has been preaching. So it's just reinforcing everything they believe in. And again, nobody is offering them an alternative. And that's the tragedy. All right. Thanks, Dave.
Yeah. Thank you.
Really appreciate your call. Really appreciate you listening. And go pre-order Equal is Unfair on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or something. I want to see a spike on the Amazon rating of Equal is Unfair after this show, because all of you went out, and let's assume they are right now live. Over 100 people are listening to this show live. If every one of you ordered the book, there would be a huge spike on Amazon. It would like go to, I would say, the top 1,000 books sold, because that's all it takes to get onto the top 1,000 is for 100 people to buy the book. So go buy the book. All right, on Kindle, on hard copy, doesn't matter. As they say, as Nike says, just do it. And if you've already pre-ordered the book, pre-order another one. All right. Let's go back to Bernie's. What Bernie is latching onto here is a real existential angst that exists. The economy in America is not doing well. Many people are really suffering. There really is an issue of inequality, in the sense that it's not an issue of inequality, but in a sense that if you're poor or lower middle class, life is very, very rough for you. If you're in the upper 1%, life is pretty good. And most people, by definition, are in the 99%. And for most people, life is not that easy, particularly if you're in the bottom 80%. Our economy does not allow for as much mobility as it used to. There are real challenges. There's no economic growth. Economic growth is very low. And even though unemployment numbers are at the lowest they've been in a long, long time, the percentage of the people in the population actually working is still very low. So there are a lot of people who are not looking for work and who are not working. Also, the number of people with part-time jobs is very high. So there's real angst. There's real angst. And Bernie is offering a solution. Bernie's offering a solution. You know, there's angst around health insurance, about co-payments, about deductibles. There's angst about how many people are in poverty. There's angst about youth unemployment. There's angst about, you know, politics and how much influence money has in politics, legitimate angst of cronyism. And then, of course, Bernie brings in the idea, which is quite prevalent among the left and is dominant in our universities, that this country is about freedom. And yet, how can you be free if you're hungry? How can you be free if you don't have economic security? This is, again, harking back to FDR. In his State of the Union 1944, we established what he called the Second Bill of Rights. Again, I go back to the idea, which I think is important, that for the left, FDR is the founding father. FDR is where it all begins. So that there is no such thing. There is no such thing as freedom unless you have economic security. Now, this is equivocation on the term freedom, because freedom means free of coercion. It means the lack of coercion, the lack of force, the lack of compulsion. Economic security necessitates forcing people. It necessitates compulsion. It necessitates coercion. So real freedom cannot include economic security. You are free if you're hungry and nobody's coercing you. Marx and the left and FDR have created this myth around economic security. You cannot be free without it. And, of course, that's a contradiction. It's a package deal, and it has no basis in reality. Real freedom means freedom from coercion. That's it. It means the ability to act based on one's own judgment, free of the coercive government, free of coercion from one neighbor, free of coercion. And, of course, once you accept economic security as necessary for freedom, you have to accept, as Bernie Sanders says, quoting from Roosevelt, note the link, to a decent job at a decent pay, the right to adequate food, clothing, time off from work, the right for every business, large and small, to function in an atmosphere free from unfair competition. What is unfair competition, I note? And domination by monopolies, the right of all Americans to have a decent home and a decent health care. Right? So it turns all these things that have to be produced into rights. You cannot have a right to somebody else's stuff. You cannot have a right to stuff that needs to be produced. The only right you have is to be free from coercion. Not according to the left. Not according to FDR. Not according to Bernie Sanders. So he says people are not truly free when they are unable to feed their families. But it's okay to enslave other people to feed their families, to feed the families of those who haven't, right? So it's okay to violate somebody's people's rights because you supposedly are not free. Capitalism. Ah, I should take a break here. I should take a break because I'm losing my voice. Okay, we're going to take a quick break and then keep on talking about Bernie. And then after that, I will take some calls from... those of you who want to talk about other topics other than Bernie Sanders. So here we go. Be right back.
The Ayn Rand Institute campus is an exciting online destination offering free e-courses on Ayn Rand and her revolutionary philosophy of objectivism. Whether you recently picked up your first Rand book or have been reading her novels and nonfiction for years, ARI Campus has something for you. On campus, you'll discover a variety of multimedia courses covering Rand's literary classics, specific aspects of thought, and how to apply her ideas to your life. Get started today at campus.aynrand.org. See you on campus.
With adoring fans, rabid critics, and very few in between, why does Atlas Shrugged evoke such impassioned responses? Because it grapples with the fundamental problems of human existence and it presents radically new answers. Atlas Shrugged challenges many conventional notions about good and evil, that sex is a low animal desire, that money is the root of evil, that man is sinful by nature. One of the most prominent is the notion that selfishness is evil and self-sacrifice is good. Atlas Shrugged is a dramatization of Ayn Rand's unique vision of existence and of man's highest potential. 12 years in the writing, it is her masterwork. Rand's worldview emerges in the plot turns of this compelling mystery, centered on one question: who is John Galt? There are many legends. Which of these is true? Is he the man who discovered the Fountain of Youth? The man who found the lost city of Atlantis? A modern Prometheus? Does he even exist? And why, if no one knows the answer, does the entire world know his name? Find out the answer when you read the novel that sparked a philosophical revolution. Order it today on Amazon.com.
In 1934, Ayn Rand wrote to journalist and essayist H.L. Mencken, "Perhaps it may seem a lost cause at present, and there are those who will say that I am too late, that I can only hope to be the last fighter for a mode of thinking which has no place in the future. But I do not think so. I intend to be the first one in a new battle, which the world needs as it has never needed before, the first to answer the many too many advocates of collectivism and answer them in a manner which will not be forgotten. Every day at ARI, we work to make sure that Ayn Rand's answer will not be forgotten. Help us. Contribute today at AynRand.org/support.
Every day we hear from political leaders that the American dream is vanishing because of rising income inequality. The rich are getting richer by rigging the system, leaving the rest of us to struggle to get by. To save the American dream, we're told that we need to fight inequality through tax hikes, wealth redistribution schemes, and a far higher minimum wage. But what if that narrative is wrong? What if the real threat to the American dream is not rising inequality, but forced equality? In their forthcoming book, Equal is Unfair, America's Misguided Fight Against Income Inequality, Don Watkins and Yaron Brook reveal that almost everything we've been taught about inequality is wrong. You'll discover why successful CEOs make so much money and why they should, how the minimum wage hurts the very people it claims to help, why claims of middle-class stagnation are a myth, and more. For more information or to pre-order the book, Equal is Unfair, visit your favorite bookseller or go to Amazon.com.
Ayn Rand was a radical thinker whose philosophical novels challenged students to reconsider their views on fundamental issues. The Fountainhead, Atlas Shrugged, and Anthem. These works have become classics of American literature that never fail to engage young people and stimulate intense classroom discussion. By offering these works for free to teachers, the Ayn Rand Institute hopes to encourage greater awareness and understanding of Rand's stimulating perspective. If you're a teacher who would like Ayn Rand's books in your classroom, visit AynRand.org. This is at no cost to you. Go to AynRand.org today.
All right, so we're back. We're talking about Bernie Sanders. Why do young people like Bernie Sanders? Well, because they're idealistic and because they want consistency. They want politicians they can believe in. And he's consistent and he's idealistic and he's a rebel. He's a going against the establishment. And young people always like anti-establishment types. But more fundamentally, Bernie Sanders is just cashing in. He's cashing in on the altruism these kids have been taught since they were little. The idea that it's okay to sacrifice some people for others. In this case, let's just sacrifice millionaires and billionaires. I mean, they've got plenty to sacrifice. That should be easy to sacrifice. Well, they're cashing in on history. That is, on the lack of any knowledge of history among young people today. They don't have a clue. The history they were taught is complete nonsense. The history they were taught is from the school from which Bernie Sanders comes from. They were taught and have been taught leftist history, a leftist interpretation of the history of the United States. And they've learned a lesson from that. They've learned from that, that the left is successful, that FDR won, that Johnson's programs were good. Now, nobody actually says, except me, Ayn Rand, of course, said this, that all the problems that exist in America today, that all the difficulties that the middle class and the poor are experiencing today in America, are the consequences of the programs passed by FDR and Truman. It's indeed Bernie Sanders' history upside down. All those programs that have passed are the cause of the financial crisis. Because without too big to fail, which is a consequence of deposit insurance, there would be no financial crisis. Without Social Security and Medicare, there'd be all that capital available in private hands to build companies, to create jobs, increase the wealth of the middle class, to increase productivity. It is Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security and the minimum wage and all these things that have destroyed America. But nobody knows that. So he's capitalizing on historical and then, of course, on economic ignorance. People don't know where wealth comes from. People don't know wealth needs to be created. They think wealth is just redistributed. People were born into the late 20th century, early 21st century, without knowing that the natural condition of human beings is poverty. And that to rise up from poverty is an achievement that requires massive effort engaged with by particular individuals, using their reason to solve problems. They don't know any of this. They have no clue. So altruism is being cashed in. History, the lack of knowledge of history is being cashed in. Lack of knowledge of economics is being cashed in. And then the whole inequality debate he's cashing in on. They've heard over and over and over again about the inequality debate, and he's just playing that like a violin. All the talking points of the inequality guys he has got, and he uses them, and he uses them, and he uses them. And he appeals to emotion, just like any of these guys state is. They appeal to emotion. They appeal to, and this is altruism, right? The suffering people over here and the millionaires and billionaires over there. We'll just take a little bit from the millionaires and billionaires and give to the people over there who are suffering. How can anybody be against that if you're a good altruist, if you're a good Christian, if you were raised on the Sermon of the Mount? How can you be against this? Well, nobody can. And then finally, so we got idealistic and consistent and rebellious. We've got his cashing in on everything these kids are being taught. And then finally, he has no challenge. Nobody challenges him. He's the most consistent of all the presidential candidates, including the Republicans. Not a single one of them challenges. Oh, they say universal health care, that'd be too expensive. Oh. Which is exactly what they said about Medicare and Medicaid and what they said about Social Security, right? And they're still around. Free tuition, that'll be too expensive. No, these are immoral programs that are going to destroy America. They're going to destroy the very essence of what America is about. They're immoral. Who's going to say that? Nobody. And that's why we are where we are today. That's why we are where we are today, because nobody will say that. There's no challenge to Bernie. All right. We've got about 20 minutes left. I want to talk about one TV show in a little while that's actually related to all this. We'll talk about that. I talked about My Robot last time. Hopefully some of you have started watching it or not, right? I'm not exactly recommending it. I'm just telling you it's a consistently, like Bernie Sanders, it's a very consistent show. And you can tell that people who like My Robot are going to love Bernie Sanders, telling them the same story. Rich billionaires, wealthy individuals, no matter how they came to their money, are manipulating the system, are rigging the system to control you. Nothing is what it seems. Mr. Robot, that's right. Sorry, it's not My Robot. Mr. Robot. Sorry, Mr. Robot. Now, again, this is a show that reinforces everything the left believes in. Everything the left believes in. And it's being watched by massive numbers of people, critically acclaimed and so on. So two requests. One, buy Equal is Unfair, and I know you're probably sick and tired of hearing this, but I really would like you to go click on Amazon and buy it. And when you buy it, use Amazon Smile. Because if you use Amazon Smile, the Institute gets like 0.5% of everything that you purchase. Like, it comes from Amazon. It doesn't increase, so you're not paying anything. It's not that the prices are higher. Amazon makes the contribution for you of 0.5%. And we do get it. We get about, I think it's $1,000 a month from Amazon Smile. Now, it should be a lot more, because what you need to make sure is when you buy the really, really expensive stuff on Amazon, that's when you use Smile. Use Smile for everything. And that way we will get everything. So, and you when next time you buy a car, you should buy it from there and everything. Okay. All right. I'm going to open the lines up now for questions you might have on any topic, including Bernie Sanders, but anything else you might have. 347-324-3075. 347-324-3075. And Liran wants to chat about China. This is a leftover call from last time, so I'm going to – let's see if we have a better connection this time. Hi, Liran. You're on the Iran Book Show.
Ni hao, ma. That means hello in Chinese.
I hear you now. This time there are no problems. Yeah. Good. So what's up?
I am well. I want to tell a story about China, and I think this really goes into the essence of what it means to be a Chinese versus what it means to be a Westerner. Okay?
Go ahead. Absolutely.
Okay, so this is not for squeamish people. I'm saying that outright. It involves Chinese food, real Chinese food. So okay. I was in a restaurant, and it's a seafood restaurant, and it was an expensive thing. I was invited. And there was a fish. And the Chinese have a tradition of cooking the fish and serving it alive. It's cooked, but it's served while the fish is still moving and conscious and whatever. And I look at it and say, oh my God, that's so cruel to the fish. What do you think the Chinese answered?
I have no idea.
You're being too philosophical. This is China. Not, this is not where you're being. Really, that's the answer. It's like, why do you think about these things? It's not going to do you any use. And I'm like trying to explain it to them, and I figure it's futile, and I don't need a fist, but I let them eat it, and I just shrug.
I think you're right. I think the Chinese are not very philosophical. Confucius, if you think about Chinese philosophy and you think about Confucius, he's not very philosophical in the sense that he's not deep.
No.
There's no metaphysics and there's no epistemology. Confucius is about human relationships. And often he's very good on human relationships. Sometimes he's terrible. But it's all about how you should relate to other people. So their whole philosophical framework starts with politics. It doesn't really even have an ethics. It's really about your relationship with other people within a society. So they're shallow philosophically. And as a consequence, they don't take philosophy seriously. And they're complete pragmatists. Pragmatists. Now,
well,
that
very
I think is an opening for us, right? I think it's an opportunity. Because
I disagree.
Yeah, I know you do. But in the West, people are so inculcated with a bad philosophy. All that space is taken up with altruism and, you know, and Kantianism and subjectivism and realisms, real philosophy. China is an empty slate. There's nothing there. And when they're confronted with a real philosophy, my experience is they actually respond. They respond positively. They're actually interested. They're actually intrigued, and they want to think about it. You don't get
the
altruistic
people who went to see you.
No. These are not people who went to see me, because I speak to a lot of I spoke to a lot of college students who were forced to go there by their teacher. I spoke to a lot of academics who were there kind of out of general interest, but who weren't Ayn Rand fans. So no, I don't get that sense at all. My sense is that people don't have the knee-jerk altruistic response to everything like they do in the West.
But you know why they are so interested in Western ideas?
Because they're failing and they want. Yep. Yeah.
I say it just because they want the effects. I'm sorry if I'm cutting in. I think it's just because they want their effects. That's what I understood while living with them.
I agree with that, but that gives you an opportunity to give them the cause. And my experience is, and it's limited. Granted, it's limited, is that there's an opportunity there to provide them with ideas because there's this openness. And to teach them that there really is a cause. All right. How things are.
Nice talking with you. Goodbye.
Good talk to you. Okay, we'll talk about Argentina. One of these days we'll do a show about Latin America. I'm going to Latin America in April. I'm going to be in Brazil and Colombia. So around that time we'll do a show in Latin America and we'll get to talk about Argentina.
Que bueno. Ciao.
It's good. Thanks.
Bye.
All right, we got a couple of other calls. Let's see. Hi, you're on the Yaron Brooks Show. Who's this?
Hey, Yaron, it's Jonathan.
Hey, Jonathan. How are things?
Good. I enjoyed your discussion about Bernie Sanders you've always talked about, people always ask you, you know, what can you do to change the culture? You've always stressed how it starts with education. And as I listen to you, it almost, you know, Bernie's got the entire Board of Education, America Board of Education, Department of Education behind him. They're all working for him in that sense.
Absolutely.
Philosophically. And one of the most important things I think that ARI does is the free books for teachers programs, because it does start with the education and professors and intellectuals. And just think, remember that woman who all the Black Lives protesters said that she needed some muscle to get a journalist out of there? I mean, it's the professors who are behind the Black Lives Matter and Occupy and Bernie Sanders. So it does all start on the campus. And, you know, why are they into Bernie? I feel like the youth has learned it from their professors. So
absolutely,
anything we
absolutely
can do to
right.
get the right ideas on these college campuses, whether it's the Undercurrent, Strive, ARI Books to Teachers, that's the only way I think the culture is going to change.
Yes, and we got to articulate the ideas, and we got to articulate, I mean, one of the things that I would say to objectivists or people who agree with us on ideas is don't emphasize the politics. This debate is not about politics. This debate is about fundamental issues like altruism and like subjectivism versus objectivity and the role of reason. That is those are the fundamental ideas, and we've got to be philosophical. And I see so many debates on everywhere about politics this, politics that, Ted Cruz versus this or that guy. None of it matters. None of it matters if the professors keep teaching the garbage that they keep teaching. At the end of the day, we will lose even if we win short term. What we need to focus on is on the philosophical debate, on the philosophical issues, on the philosophical education of young people. And that's the only alternative. It's the only way we'll get an alternative. Great, Jonathan. Thanks. And thanks for all the work you do to promote these ideas everywhere you go. And thanks for the support of the Ayn Rand Institute. And yeah, Jonathan's absolutely right. If you want to really help this, help ARI. Help us get the books to young kids. Help us get professors teaching these ideas. There is no other way. There is no other way to change the world. Hi, who's this? You're on the Yaron Brooks Show.
Good afternoon, Dr. Brooks. This is Skylar Saunders calling from Newark, Delaware.
Hey, Skylar. Always good to hear from you. How are things?
Yes, things are going well. It's a lot warmer. It's about 45 degrees. I know it's probably different where you are.
It's 80. It's 80 where I am.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
It's summer.
Pardon me, sir.
It's
absolutely. I want to see if I can guess what show you're going to talk about.
Which show?
You're talking about a television show? Do you run it in for the positive value?
Yeah, I guess. Go ahead and guess.
Billion. Is it Billion?
That's right. I'm going to talk about Billion.
I know it. I was going to say, the billionaire isn't perfect, of course. He's still altruistic. He's still collectivistic. But it's a lot of fun going for Damian Lewis to go against Paul Giamatti. I just like that dynamic, that conflict.
Absolutely. But you gotta, you know, in 2-3 minutes, I'm going to talk about, you know, about the show. I think it's a fascinating show because of what
absolutely.
It reveals about American culture.
Absolutely.
Good, good. Well, do you have a question, or is that what you wanted to ask?
Yeah, I just wanted to see. That was my only question, to see if you're going to talk about Billions.
Yes, okay. So thanks, Skylar. Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening in. So let me sum up, and then I want to talk about Billions, because I think it's an interesting show and very revealing about the philosophical state of America, and very revealing in terms of it's actually connected to the whole Bernie Sanders discussion and a lot. And it's nowhere near as bad as it could have been, but that's part of what I think is revealing about the show. Okay. Bernie Sanders, loved by young people. Why? because he actually comes across as believing in what he says. He actually takes the ideas these kids have studied, learned since they were in pre-kindergarten, and he applies them consistently to the political reality in which they live. He echoes back to them everything their professors and their teachers have taught them for 20-plus years, assuming they're in their 20s. He relates to them a American history that they can understand, an American history that starts with FDR, not with the Founding Fathers, but with FDR, because nobody teaches the importance of the Founding Fathers anymore. Indeed, the whole 19th century is taught as an evil century, a century of exploitation, a century of genocide of the American Indian, just a century of awful, awful things, none of the virtues, a century of slavery. And a lot of that stuff is true. A lot of that stuff is problematic. But none of the positives of the 19th century are taught. None of the good stuff is taught. And the lesson learned from the 19th century is all wrong. It's an anti-capitalist lesson. So Bernie Sanders is just cashing in on everything, on our culture, on our educational system, on our professors, on Paul Krugman and Piketty's narrative about inequality. I mean, the only good news I would say right now is that Bernie Sanders is not winning in a landslide. He should be. He should be. If I had all the professors in the United States behind me, I would win in a landslide. The only thing preventing Bernie Sanders from winning in a landslide is the American sense of life. Is the American sense of life. And it's in decline. So maybe Bernie won't win this time, but Bernie's going to win long term. A Bernie-like candidate is going to win. I mean, we already got Obama, who is very Bernie-like, but it's only going to get worse. It's only going to get worse. And we might have a backlash to the right now. We might get a Rubio or somebody elected. Or Hillary might win over Bernie because I think some people on the left are more interested in getting free stuff than they are in the ideology of the left. But they want the free stuff to be realistic, and they want it to be targeted at them. And that's what Hillary gives them. Hillary gives free stuff to the people who will vote for her for the sake of free stuff. You see, I don't think young people are voting for Sanders because they want free stuff. But unfortunately, I think we've created a culture in which many people who vote in the Democratic Party do want free stuff. They're playing the cronyism game. They're cronies, just like the businessmen who are cronies. And they want free stuff. And if they're realistic about getting that free stuff, they're voting for Hillary. So it's the American sense of life and a certain sense of pragmatism which is going to save us from Bernie Sanders. All right. I want to talk about this show on Showtime called Billion. First of all, it's well done. It's well produced. I'd say it's not quite as well produced and well done as was that show I mentioned earlier, Mr. Robot. It's not as clever. It's not as sharp. It's not as original, but it's well done. Acting is very good. But this is what it reveals. So you've got a district attorney who is modeled after Giuliani and Spitzer, two of the nastiest characters ever. I hate Giuliani and Spitzer for what they did to the financial industry and how they acted as district attorneys. Modeled after them, the district attorney ambition is to be governor, just like Giuliani and Spitzer. And he's a scumbag. He likes to be tied up and beaten up. He likes pain. He likes worse than that. He likes to be peed on. So he's a sexual deviant, at least in my book. I consider all that sexual deviancy. And he's a power lusting. He's a power luster. He doesn't believe in anything. He doesn't believe in anything. He's not Bernie Sanders. He's not an idealist. He wants to crush these people. He's a little fascist. He wants people to follow the law for the sake of following the law. At some point he says, I do this for the public good. And his wife says, you do it for your own good. And sometimes that overlaps with the public good. So he's in it for his own power lust. Now, all of that is great. Wow. We're finally seeing a politician, you know, a district attorney who really is all about power and all about, you know, ugliness. And then you've got a billionaire. You've got the billionaire where it's taken for granted he's made his money by cheating. That's given. He's an insider trader. They all are insider trader. There's no way to make money in hedge funds without being an insider trader. So they're all insider traders. But he's kind of a nice guy. And he helps people. And he actually takes over some companies and makes them better. And he treats people with inherited wealth really, really badly. So you sympathize with that. Oh, he's a self-made guy, and those guys are inherited wealth. But the way he's self-made is there's a huge implication. And we'll see as the series evolved, I think there'll be proof of this, that he's basically lied and stolen, the equivalent of. This is how they portray insider trading. We could do a whole show on insider trading, but let's assume it's bad, which they assume in the show. So here you go. You've got a scumbag of a district attorney and a kind of nice billionaire that everybody can feel good about, but who's a crook, who's a cheat. In other words, the series assumption is they're no good guys in the whole movie. They're no good guys. Maybe the wife of the district attorney, but she's the one doing the peeing. So one wonders, she manipulates people. She's a psychologist, and she's kind of good. But at the end of the day, this is a the most cynical show you'll ever see. They're all kind of bad guys. They're all manipulators. They're all the elite. We, the middle class and the poor, these are the guys who trample on us. Both in government and in private industry. Everybody's after you. Everybody's destroying you. This is the ruling class. And the ruling class is what's destroying the country. And the ruling class are the millionaires and billionaires and typical politicians, except for Bernie Sanders, who calls them out on it. So the district attorney could be Hillary Clinton or any one of the Republican candidates or Giuliani or Spitzer. Giuliani was a Republican. Spitzer was a Democrat. Doesn't matter. And he's going after the billionaire, but in some dark, real way, they're all the same, and they're all screwing all of us. In the chat, somebody mentioned Damian Lewis, who's the actor from Homeland. He's the billionaire, and he's very good. He's very good, and Giamonti, I think that's his name, is the prosecutor. Is very good, but this plays right into all of this. It's anti-capitalist, but in a subtle way, because it's anti-government as well. It's anti the so-called powers to be, and it equates economic power with political power. So I'm watching it, and it's entertaining, and it's educational in terms of the state of the culture. But beware, it is cynical. And beware, it is a portrayal of the leftist view of the world, of the leftist perspective, both on billionaires and on government. Both are corrupt. Both are evil. In the end, government is more important. So I'm watching it. If you guys watch it, I'd be interested in your comments and what you think of it. But this is how revolutions start, by portraying the people at the top, no matter how they got there, no matter who they are, no matter whether they're productive or moochers and looters, they're all the same. They're all bad. And we, the people, are being screwed. All right. Thanks for listening to the Ron Brooks Show. Go to Amazon and buy, or Barnes & Noble. Actually, go to Barnes & Noble and buy Equal is Unfair. And I will see you next week on the Yaron Brook Show. And I think next week we'll talk about Donald Trump. I haven't really talked about Donald Trump seriously. I want to do one of this analysis of one of his speeches, just like we did on Bernie Sanders. So next week, what about Donald Trump? Talk to you then. Have fun.
Welcome to the Yaron Brook Show. I'm Don Watkins, sitting